You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
You win the game,
you get to play the song. Isn't that right, Trevor?
You get to play the song and you get to sing the song. Love it.
That song's not cleared for these airwaves. The song that you sing.
Yeah, that is correct. Nor is the full version. We'll keep that offline.
Yeah, we'll rock with Sweet Lovin'. Victory Monday. And I think that's all maybe the more excited folks are, is just a clear statement, Victory Monday. Not a lot of enthusiasm, perhaps, but this is, one way or another, a Victory Monday. Here with both of the threes, we've got the three-man weave with the threes here. Trevor Gebhardt, whose voice you already heard from the Carolinas. Trev, how are we doing, buddy?
Doing well, staying busy. Kids are active in the background, so if you hear them, my kids, it's like a circus in this household.
Fair enough.
Just a forewarning.
Yep, fair enough. They're maybe just a little bit able to be heard, but no big deal. And joining us as well, Mr. Jackson Brown. JB, how are we doing?
Doing fantastic. Glad to be back on. Enjoying another Victory Monday.
Absolutely. Now, a rarity to get the three of us all together in the same place, but that was the point of putting together three of us, was that, by God, one of us or two of us would be able to get together no matter what, and if not, I just make Quinn do it. So this has been lots and lots of fun, and actually Zach has done an excellent job as we're when we're on the road filling in, and we've been able to bring the Bison content to you folks kind of under any circumstances. Rolling into the news, Noah Gindorf is off the two deep. Doesn't sound great. Coach was very non-committal. Just said, won't be available this week. And then was asked again and said, won't be available this week. I don't like these vibes at all. I don't like them. Removed from the two deep. And we'll talk, and actually I'm going to add that into the script because we should discuss that. We'll talk about, they've got Lipke trained in there. They've got Hofstede, trained in there. He's 6'1". I mean, they've got a lot of like running back body types trained in to play those positions, but they've got real tight end body types waiting in the wings, whether it's the Strike kid, whether it's the Williams kid, both transfers from one from Northern State, one from Buffalo. And we can actually discuss what Coach said about that as well, but they have to figure, and Finn Diggins as well. I mean, a very well thought of kid from Perham, Minnesota, but redshirt freshman is an early stage to be contributing a ton. Tight end is, there's so much information, and Trev, I'm sure you can speak to that. Not that you played tight end, but you hung out with the tight ends and you were a big time blocker and understand just, you got to know F, you got to know H. Some of them cross-train at fullback. You got to know what goes on when you're flexed out into the slot. Sometimes even NDSU's tight ends play flanker. I mean, there's a lot that goes in to playing tight end, and it's not difficult to grasp why a redshirt freshman may not be ready to just be thrown into the fire, why a transfer may not just be immediately ready to be thrown into the fire. So we'll talk about the Gindorf situation a little bit later. Cody Mauch, once again, and this was well-deserved, Cody was the highest graded player by PFF College for North Dakota State on offense or defense this week. And then by NDSU's own grading, had a 93% grade and was just named MVFC Offensive Lineman of the Week. That's a thing that's going to happen a lot, folks. He's playing at an extremely high level. He is some different kind of athlete at that size. And to no one's surprise, no respect for Lipke ever. Doesn't matter what he does. No MVFC Offensive Player of the Weeks ever for this kid. So just doesn't work out. I know I have this in here as a rant in the script, but I want to discuss like the, because Trev, you're a little bit guilty of it too. You wear it on your sleeve. You told the group chat like you wear it on your sleeve. How do we get, and Zach Willis actually pointed this out, right? Zach brought this whole thing to Twitter and just said like, okay, what do you want from a Bison game? I'm not going to pull up his tweet exactly, but like, you want zero penalties? You want to win every game 42 rip? What do you want? And my thing is like, how many consecutive drives does it have to go for the Bison? And I'm not accusing you of this, Trev, because it wasn't you, certainly, even in the chat, even at your weakest moments. But like, folks on, you got to be able to watch more than two quarters of Bison football before we start calling for people's jobs. Philosophical changes, or I mean, if you go back and I did, like, you go back and look at some of these tweets and some of these comments from a game, from a road conference game that they won 34-17, you would have thought the sky was absolutely falling. And so, Trev, kind of defend yourself or defend the folks that maybe are a little over passionate when North Dakota State is down 10.
Yeah, I think, especially from my own perspective, having worn the uniform and then you watch it from a distance and you see six quarters of consistent bad play, that's just bad football. And that's what my tweet was about. And I think what we've gotten used to is the exact opposite of that. And the expectation is so high that it's almost impossible to meet. There's nothing that can be met, because the expectations already hit that ceiling. So at this point, all you can do is basically go undefeated, not have any turnovers or any penalties. And I think the biggest part of this that people get emotional about, myself included, is when it happens in critical moments, it gets amplified. You're going to have a magnifying glass on it. And it has happened in the two games that you can't have that occur or you will go home with the loss. It happened at Arizona and it was starting to happen in Vermillion. Now this team answered the bell, and I think they have found a good identity in that regard, because that second half was, I don't want to say flawless, but it was really, really clean football. And effort's never been a question with this group. I think there would be a lot more venom in the tone if effort was a part of it. But I think it's just shooting themselves in the foot and guys just maybe pressing a little bit. So I think when people get upset about stuff, it's just passion coming out. And myself included, I sent out a tweet saying this is bad football. And it was. Those are just the things that you can't have. And I'm just glad that the pendulum had an upswing feel to it for the last two quarters, because for six quarters, it wasn't the case. And that's just a spade a spade.
I push back on that a little bit. Yeah. I think calling the Arizona game four bad quarters is an oversimplification, especially on the you can't go to a Pac-12 stadium and lose by 3 points and just call it four bad quarters. I know you'd like to win the game. But yep. Let's say they call the holding on the Delora touchdown where Kava gets tackled and NDSU wins the game. That's one play, flips the result of the game. Now all of a sudden, right, there's four good quarters. I'm not even necessarily playing devil's advocate, just a little pushback on like calling the loss in Arizona some sort of an unmitigated disaster.
Yeah. I'll clarify a little bit. as far as that being a general statement. It's more so the fact of playing clean football in critical moments of the game, not giving the other team a chance to win. I think that's what happened at Arizona. We shouldn't beat that. We shouldn't beat a dead horse in that regard. But I think, especially with the USD game, they didn't do anything outstanding. They didn't play great. They didn't play bad. USD literally just took what NDSU gave them. And I think that's where I'm coming from, is that this team has been gifting their opponents for six quarters what they received. So I think that's where people are probably referring to when they're getting upset, is just that the team cannot be giving things away, because as you get deeper into Valley play, as you get deeper into the playoffs, those things will come back to haunt you that North Dakota State has been the beneficiary of for well over a decade. So we've gotten spoiled. I think we need to temper expectations just a little bit in terms of playing perfect football. But I think as far as just playing clean, penalty-free football and limit the turnovers, the rest you can deal with if you're just straight up beat, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I understand. Look, I think Coach might have used the term unforgivable or unacceptable. I can't remember what he did, but he classified like five of the penalties against USD as like the unallowable kind, the red zone false starts, the personal fouls, just stuff that like just can't happen. A hold, a legal block in the back, like things that just a face mask when you're grabbing at air and you grab, like those are things that I think he'll let slide. It's the stupid ones that he won't, you know, it's the avoidable ones that don't fly. Look, I get it. I guess my point in general, we'll get Jax's take on, because that spoiled word is interesting. And something I think folks get a little bit touchy about occasionally, on the internet and just in general, because of, you know, we've talked about attendance, at the home games. We've talked about a number of different things and fan expectations, and certainly all of that is a big part of the conversation about moving up as well. You know, what are fan expectations, and are people, the other one besides spoiled, bored? That's the other one that gets thrown around. My thing to just, guys, Tyler Roll's good at his job, like really, really good at his job. I'm sorry. He just is. Look at the actual end of year statistics from the last, since he took over the helm, all like their end of year ranks. It's not by accident. Yeah, there are good players. Guess what? He helped develop those good players besides calling the plays. He helped develop those good players. NDSU has a system. I get that, like, you'd like to see the intermediate passing game open up a little bit. You'd like, by the way, what a dot. And you want to talk intermediate passing game. That layered throw to Braylon on NDSU's sideline from Cam was just sick. And we'll get to Cam a little later on in the show as well. But, folks, this is a learning process. This is not a finished product. And NDSU football is always playing their best ball in December and January. Specifically, by the way, when your number one passing option last year is with the Green Bay Packers, your number two passing option last year is with the Carolina Panthers, your number three passing option last year, we don't know what's going on. Coach is talking in press conferences like, I don't know if he's going to be, but like, yeah, there's going to be an adjustment when it's DJ Hart and Joe Stoffel. Like, and I'm not saying that those guys aren't going to make it. I think they will, but you just expect the passing offense to hum along. And not only that, but the play calling. I've got receivers. I don't know that they're going to be at the right route depth. I don't know if they're going to make the catch. I'm hoping they do. You know, haven't gotten a ton of separation through 4 weeks, or should I hand it off to the Walter Payton Award kid? Like, those are my options. I'm going to go with option B until we lose a football game doing that. I'm sorry. I got a little heated there, but that's just where I'm at. JB, what are your thoughts on the whole thing as far as are NDSU fans spoiled? Have you guys placed expectations in a place where they can no longer be reached? What are your thoughts on just being able to get through like even halftime before pretending the sky is falling and thinking we need a change of leadership?
Right. Well, you know, I think it's what makes this team so special and so different, right? You don't see this elsewhere. these expectations that we set for ourselves and that the community has for its team are higher than anywhere else in the country, and rightfully so. And, you know, I get the disappointment and I get why people might be frustrated, but, you know, like the GOAT said, R-E-L-A-X, you know, the fans just sometimes got to take a step back, and, you know, the people just got to take a deep breath, and, you know, the performance in the second half is exactly why. So.
Totally agreed, folks. Bison Report Radio Podcast is brought to you by the wonderful people over at Gateway Chevrolet. Go see my good friend John Cole over there on the Chevy side of the Chevy desk. If you're thinking of a new vehicle, think Gateway Chevrolet. Gateway Chevrolet has new inventory arriving daily. Remember, your trade is always worth more at Gateway Chevrolet. Trade it in or get cash for your used vehicle now on the I-29 frontage road in Fargo or online at gatewayfargo.com. So we talked a lot this week about the compartmentalization of the Arizona game. You know, I it's not famously, but it's something that I've brought up a number of times. Like I said to Coach Entz in the press conference Monday before Arizona, you could lose this game by 30 points and it doesn't change your season goals. He said, you are correct. So, and then we kind of went off of that on that tangent along the lines of how much do they care? Of course they want to win, but if they don't win, maybe their legacy is a little bit different because they don't have, like, Coach Entz doesn't have that FBS win. Nobody on the roster has an FBS win because they barely ever get to play the games anymore. And so you wonder, okay, did they really just treat it like another game? Or did that thing mean a lot more than they let on and they showed up tight in USD? JB, what do you think?
Man, I just – that AstroTurf, every time I feel like we've played there, it's a little bit of a slow start now. You know, maybe that's an overgeneralization, but I don't know what it is. You know, the difference in atmospheres, obviously, you know, you go from playing in a Pac-12 stadium with, you know, the fans roaring and everything like that down to Vermilion in the Dakota Dome. It's a little different. You know, it's asking for a slow start, but it is frustrating because, you know, that's exactly what the coaches were preaching all week. You know that that's something they were focused on, and they didn't want that hangover. And, you know, unfortunately, it still happened. So a whole bunch of different factors that can lead to it. Just was disappointing to see happen, though.
Yeah, because all week, like, the vibe around here had been pray for the Coyotes. Pray for them. Like, what the frustration – they said they're not disappointed, they're frustrated. And it was assumed, especially, my God in heaven, you go back and look at the last four results when playing USD, it was real bad for the red team. Now you kind of assume that just Thor's hammer is going to come down upon the Yotes, and all of a sudden it just kind of didn't. Trev, what were you were obviously nervous, not necessarily nervous, but you were frustrated at the way they started the game. What did you see from the guys? Was it Lipke said after the game, like, he thought they were just doing too much. Did you get that vibe?
It almost was like, and I didn't expect this from this group, because you come to North Dakota State knowing expectations are going to be high. And that's just something that, you know, but it was like these guys were pressing, like they still had something to prove. And when you do that, you're trying not to make a mistake. Well, mistakes happen when you do that. And that's, they just continued to shoot themselves in the foot, like we started this pod with, at the most critical moments. They get a drive. I think it was their first drive. You have third and medium, and you get a false start. Well, now you're in third and long. You shorten the playbook for what you have. Cam's trying to put the perfect throw on, and it's a pick. Albeit it's against a good defender too. So I know Jackson will probably have some thoughts on that. But like when you're doing stuff like that, it's just, it's telling me that there's something cloudy in the guys' heads to try to play perfect football. And that's not what you have to do. Just cut loose and play fast. You're going to have the support. Guys might get frustrated, fans, coaches, the locker room, they might get frustrated. That's fine. They were frustrated after Arizona. Just don't let the same team beat you twice. Same thing if you win a game. Don't go beat the same team twice. So forget it and move on. And I think it took them a half to regroup. And they clearly played to their potential in the second half, because the results speak for themselves. They were clean. They played fast. They were very physical. and the ball happened to bounce their way. So I just think it's a classic case of just trying to do too much and trying to press when you don't necessarily have to.
Trev, I'm going to let you take the next one too, being the offensive guy. Yeah. Ball security, fumbles. That's something you don't see every day. Ganella, Bussy just got whacked like that. And that's a good football player. We talk about Miles Gardner. Yeah. I think that kid's an All-American to me so far. I mean, 3 picks and 3 forced fumbles in 4 games. Like, what are we even talking about here? Those are Charles Woodson numbers.
a lot of Packer references today. I love it.
Well, it is what it is. It's ball security is something that does surprise me. The Cam pick, can't do that. Got it. Like your wide receiver is 7'3". Like, throw it into the first row if you need to. There's no reason a 5'10 DB has a shot against Mathis. And would I like Mathis to kind of fight over and knock that away and maybe see if Croza can kick one or just keep the momentum? Yeah, but it's, you're not expecting that ball to be that underthrown. What have you seen with ball security? Is it just this is a current run of bad luck, or what are you seeing?
I wouldn't call it a current run of bad luck, because Arizona and the first half of USD, I think the turnover margin was -2. Very uncharacteristic as a group. And it's not just one or two culprits. It's a culmination of a group of guys.
Sure.
I don't know if it's just not being emphasized enough. I don't know if it's just not a point of focus. But the ball is the program, in the famous words of Zach Willis in our group chat. The ball is the program.
Ball is the program. There's no question.
It is, especially in this style of offense. Now, if you're slanging it and you're going to chuck it around the yard 80 times a game, different type of feel. But when you are ball control, now I'm being like, I'm going to bite my tongue here because they still had the ball for 40 minutes. But when you try to take the air out of the defense, you control the game. The ball is the program. You cannot turn the football over because your possessions are limited. And thankfully, North Dakota State was playing a team that isn't exactly up to the same caliber, so it's not going to hurt you as much. But that's just one of those things that has to get cleaned up. I'm glad it's happening now. It's one of those things I'm not like overly concerned about it, but by the time you get to game 3 in the Valley, those have to be done. Fumbles have to be done. Picks have to be done. They're going to happen. But they just cannot happen in moments where you can control it.
And we were, Zach and I, and I don't want to pull a muscle patting myself on the back here, but the last thing that I said, either on the Bison Report show or the last podcast, was two things: single digit missed tackles and win the turnover battle. And I don't see how NDSU doesn't win by 4 touchdowns. Buddy, not mission, not accomplished. Right. Turnovers were a mess and they missed 16 tackles. That was something that we had kind of ID'd going in. Jackson, you've been blocked by Cody Mock, I'm sure, a time or two in your life. What makes this kid so unbelievable? And has NFL scouts just hovering over his games right now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, outside of the physical traits, the guy just finishes every play, does he not? That's something you notice every time you're watching the film of him. It's the highlight is 7 seconds long because he's blocking somebody into the sideline. He's pancaking someone. He's taken out two. It's just awesome to see. And I know I've talked about this before a little bit, but just seeing how far he's developed from coming in as a tight end, rocking number 46 at the first fall camp that I saw him in. To see where he is now and to just watch him absolutely dominate week after week, it's impressive. And I think that's the difference. It's just he's finishing every single rep.
Yeah, 2 MVFC offensive linemen of the week already. Might get to 4 or 5 of those things. He's very, very impressive. Up and down day for Cam Miller. I thought PFF College had him at like a 55, so right there at kind of average. He's certainly graded out better for them in the past. And I know, the two ones that really drop that kill me are the ball to Mathis was just bad. And he'll tell you that because that was perfectly protected. He had all day, he was there. He could have written the show script before he popped that one out to Mathis. And just, you can't underthrow a guy like that. And then A little bit of pressure. You know, there was play power, and Sundell didn't peel off quite back fast enough on the blindside rusher, and Cam had to really whiz that one. But they ran that kind of over and go with Braylon Henderson and got him wide open, and Cam just missed the throw. Either threw it too far, didn't put enough air under it, one of the two, and that would have been a touchdown, and I think that would have really defined his day differently. Now, a couple of key conversions, both with his feet and through the air. Beautiful, beautiful ball to Braylon, I thought. Suffered another really big third down conversion, hit Stoffel right in the chest, and Stoffel dropped it. That would have been another play that makes the game feel a little different, makes Cam's performance feel a little different. Not a banner day for number 7. And oddly enough, no number 15. I thought that was interesting. Three, what did you see from, I should say three with the, you're both three.
Yeah.
Trevor's display name is three. So
yeah, I figured you're referring to me because I put my number in there, not my name. So for me, this isn't a huge concern. We know Cam can spin it. We know what he's capable of because he's showing it time and time again. For me, I'm actually encouraged by it because they're trying to get the ball downfield. I can tell that was an emphasis made, and receivers are getting open. So Cam is trusting them to go get the football. First game in Valley play, they haven't really done it a lot this season. So then being able to connect 10-plus yards downfield, not entirely consistent yet, is not a huge concern of mine. I think we're going to learn a lot more in this game against Youngstown. But the fact that they took a step in the right direction in that regard to not be so heavily reliant on the run, that was encouraging to me. Just the fact that they're pushing downfield. That one that he overthrew to Braylon, right? It was to Braylon?
Yeah, yep.
Left, right, yep. I was watching the game with my dad, and I said, that's the first time I can recall them taking a shot like that and them getting open. So the fact that we're doing that is, to me, a good sign and an indication that this offense is taking a step in the right direction.
Well, it's just a natural reaction. I mean, JB, you played some safety. Like, if you're coming down and run fitting, and they run a little over go, you're on your way down to get smacked in the face by Luke Waters for the eighth time. Like, it's you're going to let that wide receiver maybe slip past you once for a touchdown and just a play I think they wish they should have hit. Speaking of wide receivers, DJ Hart, I've been really impressed. Trev, I sent you the I sent you the clip from NCAA&T where they ran a little pop pass to him on the Christian Watson jet thing. And he made a bunch of guys miss. Now Mason Miller got called for a hold on that play and it was taken back, but some really, really, really nice comeback routes and catching the ball with his hands and strong hands and making himself available to Cam, working back towards the ball and towards the sideline, kind of boxing out his defender, just doing what you're supposed to do. And I think, PFF had him for 11 snaps. Gotta get that up. And I know, and I get it. Like Tear Hart does a lot of the 22 personnel stuff. And, there are plenty of times where they were just trying to run the holy hell out of the ball, but I need more than 11 snaps for my guy.
Yeah. Bump those numbers up. Those are rookie numbers, dropping the hips. Well, getting out of breaks. Well, very technically sound, catching away from his body. I'm anticipating a little more, targets moving forward for Mr. Hart.
JB, you've been in at halftime where things aren't maybe going all that well. Lipke made it sound like both the coaches and players took a role in that. How does and look? I'm not. Please don't give away state secrets. I don't need that in my life. But I mean, are you guys getting MF'd in there? Are players MF'ing? Is like what's the general vibe? Do the coaches go and then the players say their piece? What when it's just clearly, especially my God in heaven, you give up the touchdown to go up or to tie the game because you're going down, and I can't remember what happened, but it seemed like it could have been 17-3. The game just is blurred in my mind now. Well, it's not. Now it's 10-3. You go, well, the Bussey fumble. That was the deal. The pick and then the Bussey fumble. The Bussey fumble doesn't happen. You can go down and make it 17-3. And I think probably really changed the way that thing goes completely. That doesn't happen. They go down, score a touchdown. Ganella fumbles, score a touchdown again. Two touchdowns in 40 seconds when this is a team not used to giving up two touchdowns in a game. What is that like? I mean, just kind of walk us through the experience there.
Well, you know, it depends game to game and situation to situation, obviously. But something like this, it's going to be spirited in that locker room regardless. Whether that's the captains, you know, getting after the guys at their position, or whether it's the coaches, it's going to be spirited in there. And, you know, the good thing about it was that it was all fixable stuff. Like you talked about, turnovers, penalties, dumb mistakes. So at a certain point, you know, that high spirited and that frustration and that energy in the locker room is going to be easily translated into, okay, so, you know, here's where we're missing the boat. And, you know, they go over that and see that it's all fixable things of fixable nature. That's when that, you know, high spirited locker room turns into something like, okay, this is all we got to do moving forward. We take care of these little things and, you know, everything else will take care of itself. So absolutely, it's going to be some frustration and some, you know, some volume in that locker room at halftime. But I think, you know, coming from experience, it's something that is kind of in one ear, out the other, and then you move on to the next half, and that's exactly what these guys did.
Across midfield, a foot race, 30, 20, 10, trot in there, baby!
Folks, if you are doing business with an insurance company where their brand is up on the door, maybe they've got a Super Bowl commercial, maybe they're just on your TV when you're watching sports, and that is the only thing they sell, you are taking a gamble. And that gamble is that that guy in that desk and what product he sells is exactly what's right for you and your family. And if it's not, you got to do the work yourself and go to 7 or 8 more versions of that guy. Don't do that. Talk to my guy, Quinn Allo at Tundra Insurance in Horace, right on the Mag Drag, right south of Big Irv's. Quinn's got over 20 different carriers that he works with. He's able to find the best fit, the best coverage, the best price for you and your family. Let Quinn do the work. He's not doing anything anyway. 701-969-1661 or tundrainsurance.com and ask for Quinn. Jax, what went better defensively in the second half? I know that there were 16 missed tackles. Maybe 13 of them were in the first half. I don't know. But something went better for them defensively, obviously, to pitch a second half shutout.
Yeah, and I don't think it has anything really to do with the X's and O's or the statistical side of things. It just you could sense a different sort of energy and a different sort of urgency out of the guys. Saw a lot of people playing more loose, more confident, and just a lot hungrier in the second half. And it seemed like maybe in the first, you know, people were thinking a little bit too much, worried about their responsibilities, and maybe taking away that confidence and that looseness and just going out there and knowing your assignment and playing full speed. And, you know, we always talked, if you're going to make a mistake, make it full speed. And in the first half, I saw mistakes being made not at full speed, people hesitant. And in the second half, it was just a lot more clean and a lot more confident, and guys were flying around having fun out there.
Yeah, I mean, they talk about that all the time, where if you're going to be indecisive, you're going to screw up the play anyway. So make it fast. Absolutely. I thought specifically, man, and we'll talk about it in a little bit, Wirtz and Kubits, I thought, boy, they were good. And it was like they were either one, the game was slowing down for them a little bit, or two, they were speeding up. They were making decisions. They were clicking to close. I was impressed by that. Trev, this tight end situation, I know you're a wide receiver, but you put that work in blocking. You know, you were a perimeter ram, if you will. Why is it so difficult to just show up and play tight end at North Dakota State? And I ask that because, you know, they've got, like I said, the Hofstad kid and the Waters kid, and I think Brozio can even play a little bit of inline tight end, but those guys aren't, outside of Lipke, those guys aren't significant threats down the field. They're not significant, you know, guys that you're going to want to work into your pass offense, but they do have those guys. It's Carson Williams, 6'4", 240, transfer in from Buffalo. Jacob Streit, 6'4", 240, transfer in from Northern State, was an all NSIC wide receiver. Joe Stoffel, high 3-star kid, had an offer Probably would have ended up going to Wisconsin if they wouldn't have got one of the top tight ends in that receiving class. Like, Joe's a big deal. There's a bunch of guys, you know, that are big deals, but maybe in the tight end side of things, don't have a ton of snaps, don't have a ton of practice reps even. So how long are we going to have fullbacks playing tight end, I guess, is what I'm asking. And how long until maybe some of these guys are able to relay the information, because tight end's not one position at NDSU. It's like four.
Right. I'm going to simplify this as best I can. It comes down to two things: one, alignment; two, assignment. Your alignment and assignment are going to change drastically with the shifts and motions that NDSU does throughout the entirety of the game. And you might have an alignment and assignment that is one way the first half, and it's going to be another way the second half, depending upon how the opposition lines up to it. Those first 15 plays are scripted. You line up in a certain way to see how they line up to it, and then you play the chess match from there. And as a tight end, you've got to be on point with all those responsibilities. And if you cannot execute those with precision, aligning correctly and then executing the assignment, just being in your spot on time, it's not even necessarily making the play. It's a piece of the whole puzzle. And if you cannot do that consistently, you cannot be relied upon to do that in the field. It is a very, very key component of this offense. And if you are not alignment assignment sound and you know that playbook in and out, it's going to be tough to find yourself on the field. So I think it's just a matter of getting more reps and practice for some of those guys to build depth, because the way these injuries have gone, the way we currently don't know what's happening with that room in terms of timeline with Gindorf specifically, they're going to have to step up. They're going to have to be on their spot on time. They're going to have to know what their assignment shifts to when they shift in motion. So this offense is not simply, hey, block a guy, figure out if it's man or zone, or go run a route every once in a while. That's not the case. So, you know, I'm hopeful these kids are recruited for a reason. You just don't recruit kids into that offense without being intelligent. So I think they'll be just fine, just from my perspective at this current moment. But they do need to get more live reps.
JB, Dawson, your guy, just continues to shine. I don't know if I've ever seen anything quite like it. Three forced fumbles in four games and a fumble recovery and a dropped pick six. I'm almost giving him credit for that one. But, like, he's like Peanut Tillman out in these streets. Like, I've never seen something quite like this, a run like this. Very impressed with Dawson Weber.
Yeah, it's awesome to see. And, you know, he's just in the right place at the right time. It seems like every time that the ball is turned over, and he's always, you know, a part of whoever forced the turnover. It just seems like he's in the right place, right time, all the time. And, you know, a lot of people who maybe watch games and don't quite understand, you know, the depths of the game, that they might call it luck or whatever, but you know, that's not luck. That's film room, that's film study, and that's knowing exactly where to be at exactly the right time. And that's something that's obviously come with his 6 years of being there. And just that confidence that he has with the playbook and the system that he plays in, it allows him to just be in that right spot at the right time so often. And it's great to see it paying off for him. It's, you know, I'm going to start having to call him Honey Badger or something. This is unreal. So
tackling, something I asked Coach Entz, I want to get the player's perspective on this. You know, so much. And look, I don't want to come off as a boomer and oh, you guys are getting so soft these days, but sincerely, like the actual bring you to the ground tackling in practice is less than it was 10 years ago. It's certainly less than it was 20 years ago. A lot of 11 on 11, you go to a thud. Fewer guys obviously getting hurt in practice, but that's a question for me, is how do you fix? And, you know, it's been bad. It's been bad, all season. I think from a defensive perspective, I'm looking at the totals, and that's 57 missed tackles in four games. It's unreal. I'm going to just real quick, last year, missed tackles, 140. That's in 15 games, and we're a third of the way there. You know, I mean, just And last year's team, I didn't think tackled that well either.
Right. So,
how does that get repped? How do you address this situation when they're not going to have, you know, Nick Kubitz come down and whack Tamarick Williams like right. four times in a practice?
Yeah. It's, you know, it's a double-edged sword. The more that the NCAA and that organizations work towards, you know, looking out for player safety, the less proficient the tackling will probably be, in my opinion. You know, you don't have these two-a-days anymore. You don't have the full contact practices that we used to have. And, you know, it is probably overall a positive, but, you know, we're seeing what happens when maybe it's not repped as much as it needs to be. And, you know, that's something that teams everywhere are having to adjust with. So it'll be interesting to see how it continues going forward here. But I know that these boys will be getting any sort of tackling reps that the coaches can dream up for them this week. So
that's fair. Wirtz and Kubitz, Ent said they probably both played their best game as a Bison. I'm looking at the defensive grades for PFF just specific to the USD game. And they are both actually, let me just pull this up. This is excellent, excellent radio right now. I want to get this exactly correct. Not that I don't think people are probably going to check me on this. Two of the top three graded players on the defense as a whole. And between the two of them, they were assigned one of the 16 missed tackles. Between both Kubitz and Wirtz. So, boy, I thought Matt made a really strong statement after the question I asked him last week where he said, I want to pick a guy. Somebody make me pick a guy. And both guys actually ended up making him prolong this rotation thing another week because they both said, I'm going to be the guy.
Right. Huge step forward for both of them this week. It was great to see. Yeah, I think maybe they took it a little personally and, maybe rightfully so. Maybe that was exactly what they needed to kick them into gear. You know, the PFF grade speaks for itself. They obviously weren't making too many, schematic errors, which is the number one most important thing. But then two, I just noticed they were both playing with their hair on fire. They were both playing so much faster. Wirtz, I can't remember which play came first, but one of his big plays that he had, just kind of, it felt like it set him off for the rest of the game. It got him that little bit of confidence. Yeah. And the rest of the game, he just literally was everywhere. He was all over the field. And then Kubitz, man, he's just an energizer bunny. He doesn't stop running around and he's flying around and he's making tackles in space on the perimeter. Love to see him just all over the field. Just a great step up for these two this week. And, you know, maybe something, is to be said about, you know, giving a little boot and maybe providing a little extra spark for these guys from Coach Entz last week.
Because we mentioned I complained about middle of the field pass defense against Arizona. It just wasn't the perimeter guys, the corners didn't get whooped, but the middle of the field guys were terrible. Let's talk about these coverage numbers from Kubitz and Wirtz. They were targeted 8 total times, 4 apiece. Kubitz didn't give up a catch and had 3 PBUs. Wirtz gave up 3 catches for 10 yards, and he had a pick the other time that he didn't immediately bring the guy to the ground. These guys were just dogging people out there.
Yeah, that's all you can ask for, right? Especially out of the position that they're playing. Obviously, Kubitz, a little smaller at his position, a little more apt to play, you know, better in some space and in some one-on-one situations. So great to see him maximizing that there. But then Wirtz, obviously, 3 catches for 10 yards and then a pick. I mean, you can't ask much more out of your middle linebacker. So
one guy, Javi Derrett. I don't know. I can look here if they – yeah, so I guess it was more of a one splash play that I noticed, and his grade's fine. And honestly, I've got my own opinion of the way that he played, but he took on like a double team that we pointed out and just sort of ragdolled a bunch of folks and then grabbed the running back until Kubitz could come and knock his head off. And it was just the coolest thing I've seen from a nose guard all season. And I've heard, you know, Zach talks about Javi about like he's going to be that guy. Zach, you know, was probably a second time center at the time that Javi was a second time or second team center at the time that Javi was a second team nose. He's been telling me about Javi Derrett for 2 years. It's something that they really, really need. They have to keep these smaller linebackers clean. And Javi just needs to build on that success and build on that success. I know Eli is a three tech, but not having Eli next to you sucks. But if Javi can be that Ryan Drevlo, that Brian Schatz, if he can be that guy, it could mean huge things for this team and for these linebackers.
Absolutely. You saw and you continue to see flashes every week with Javi. And that's the main thing that I know this coaching staff is going to just emphasize with him. Obviously, the flashes are what keep you coming back and what keep you excited. But now can you do it consistently and, you know, week after week, keep compiling these big plays that he's making. But I'm excited for Javi.
Absolutely. All right. Last one and we'll get this thing wrapped up. Trev, what are they working on in practice this week? What do you think?
Heavy dose of 7-on-7. Keep pushing the ball downfield. You start doing that, this offense is going to be lethal. The other thing I'm going to say is you can line up 44 everywhere. So I think that's going to be one thing in this offense moving forward. And I'll leave it at that.
I agree. All right. A big thank you to the threes, Jackson Brown and Trevor Gebhardt. Thank you to Tundra Insurance. And thank you to our presenting sponsor, Gateway Chevrolet. Thank you, fine people, for listening. Have a phenomenal rest of your week. And go Bison.